the World Series supposed to be tonight? First game? What are you all doing here?
The Red Sox on it.
Go Mets.
Thank you so much. So I've got a handout. One page for each of you. If it's worth saying, it's worth writing down, I always say.
Johnism.
Like Johnism?
So, I'm calling my talk tonight Tinnitus and Appreciation. And if you understand why I called it that by the end of the talk, then I've done my job well. So first of all, just in case there are people who don't know me, my name is John Fries. I'm a member of the Bellingham Insight Meditation Society Teaching Corps. We're a group of members who teach beginning meditation at the Beginning Again class that we offer 2-3 times a year. We also sometimes get the chance to talk about other topics regarding Buddhism, and sometimes we even get a chance to talk about our own experiences of working with the Buddha's teachings, like tonight. So I'm kind of excited about this being a little more personal talk than I usually give. So I will start at the beginning, begin at the beginning, as they say. In mid-January of last year, I was lying down, meditating of all things, and I heard two very distinct clicking or tapping sounds in my right ear. And immediately followed was a ringing and hissing that continued through a very fitful night of sleep. Greeted me in the morning and has been with me ever since. So out of the blue, I had become one of apparently 20 million people in the United States who suffer from a condition called tinnitus, also pronounced tinnitus apparently. But I think people are more familiar with tinnitus as the pronunciation. And according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, for 2 million people, this condition is extreme and debilitating. I'm not currently debilitated by any means, thankfully, and then I'll talk about why that is, but I think I would have used that word the first 2 weeks. It was bad. I was not in a happy place. So someone with tinnitus hears sound, despite the fact that there is no external source of that sound. In my case, it appears that it was the result of some damage that was done to tiny hair cells in my inner ear. These hair cells, they're what send the actual signals regarding what frequency you're hearing to the brain. And because of the damage, these hair cells are always on, as it were. And they send this sort of constant signal to the brain, and I hear it as a sort of phantom sound. So for 2 weeks after the onset of this condition, I was reminded of just how much torment an undisciplined mind like my own can cause. Here are some entries from a journal that I had been keeping at the time. The ringing has not gone away. It is constant and sometimes distressing. At one point, I felt some panic rising, fearing that this ringing noise would be with me for life. I feel trapped in my head. Another entry. Couldn't sleep well because of the tinnitus. Dealt with bouts of panic and depression. Very frightened that this will always be with me. Another entry. I saw my doctor about the tinnitus. he prescribed some anti-anxiety medication to take if necessary. And one last entry. The tinnitus is a constant presence, always there. And although I work hard to keep my mind on other things, it makes me despair at times, and I wonder whether I'll ever have the same sense of well-being and joy I had before. So after nearly 2 weeks of unsuccessfully trying to cope with this new condition, I decided to call a couple of Western Buddhist monks that most of you know, Ajahn Santi, Santi Damo, and Ajahn Jeff Tanisaro. And it was a great decision. I learned quite remarkably that both of them have had or currently have tinnitus, which made their advice all the more pointed. Ajahn Jeff apparently suffered from tinnitus off and on while he was in Thailand. His doctor told him it was probably due to a manganese deficiency. In Ajahn Santi's case, his tinnitus has continued for at least a couple of decades. He currently has it. He says it's the result of having worked for a long time around jet engines when he was in the Air Force. He says sometimes, he says that it's been getting worse over time, and that sometimes it sounds like a fire alarm going off in his head. But the important thing is that he says it no longer causes him any anxiety or distress. And I can't tell you, just, you know, these are both men I greatly admire, and I see that, you know, I see what a strong, rich practice they have and how much good they're doing with their lives, and to hear that, you know, both of them have had it, or Ajahn Santi, who currently has it, to an extreme degree, to hear them tell me that, and also, you know, to get their advice about how to fold this into my practice, it just was quite wonderful, and I just, it allowed me to turn the corner almost immediately. And ever since those conversations with them, I've really never had, with one brief exception, which I'll talk about later, any acute distress as a result of my condition, which I think speaks to the power of something called wise association, which I tried to define seeking the company of those who embody qualities we aspire to, so we may benefit from their example, encouragement, and inspiration. So I think the power of wise association was quite profound in this case, and I owe them both a great debt of gratitude. So the acute distress was suddenly, almost immediately gone, and in its place was this sense of optimism and interest and a real eagerness to put into practice what they taught me. So I'm going to share that advice, the advice that I received from them, with you tonight, and I hope it's useful. There's about, I think, how many? 14-something pieces of advice that they gave me between the two of them. If one of them helps, when you can use a tip.
16.
Thanks. You know, if just one of them can be of some help in a time of need, I think that'll be just great. And certainly, most of these don't apply just to, you know, tinnitus. Obviously, they would apply to sort of many other kinds of mental and physical challenges and adversity. Tonight I'm going to highlight those, though, that were particularly helpful in my case. So, after the onset of this new condition, I was suffering, and I use that word with the full knowledge that this particular condition of mine was, you know, there are people in this sangha who I know are dealing with conditions that are far, far more challenging. I think suffering is always is the condition itself, but also how ready you are to cope with that condition. I don't consider myself a particularly strong person, and so even this particular little bit of adversity that I was faced with was resulted in quite a bit of suffering for me. So I will use that word with that qualification. I was suffering on two fronts. One, I had the acute distress of feeling trapped in my head. I've always sort of had a fear of confinement, and having this raging sound of tinnitus in my head non-stop, 24/7, I just felt trapped in my head. And so there was some real acute distress as a result of that, sort of this relentless torture of sound. And then there was a more sort of chronic underlying despair that this thing would always be with me, and that I would never again have real silence, would never again be able to experience the peace of the silent mind, something that I had at that time just recently really learned to appreciate and was very attached to. So with regard to that, Ajahn Santi gave me a very good piece of advice and told me that the peaceful mind is possible under any circumstances. And he illustrated this in a way that just got me very excited, because the irrefutable logic of what he told me was just quite wonderful. He said that the sound of tinnitus, and again he is a sufferer, is not much different than the ambient sounds of the Thai forest monastery that he trained in for a while. It's never quiet there. There's always this cacophony of insects and other forest life. I lived in Japan for 16 years, and I think I've experienced what it must be like in a Thai forest monastery in the summer in Tokyo, especially in the wooded areas on the periphery of Tokyo, where these cicadas just, it is a deafening sound, and they are always on. So I could imagine that that's probably what it's like in a Thai forest monastery. Nonetheless, monastics, monks, and nuns, they seek out places like that. That's where the forest tradition is thriving. People who live probably closest to the way the Buddha and his disciples lived, they seek out places like this to find seclusion, to cultivate contentment, to learn to attain very deep and profound states of meditation. So, I just gave that some thought. You know. Clearly, it can happen in places like that. Why can't it happen with sound in my head? And Ajahn Santi explained to me that sound and mind, that is the awareness of sound, are very separate things, and one need not disturb the other. So, the first step that I took in applying this advice was to become aware of all the other sounds that I could hear, that I hadn't noticed because I had become so obsessed with this sound in my head. I opened up to the full spectrum of sound in the auditory field, as Ajahn Santi called it, and investigated, is there any intrinsic difference between the sound in my head and the external sounds? And these sorts of, this work and this investigation was very easy to do, and that's one of the things I'm going to talk about later, because I was so highly motivated. I just wanted to do anything to get over this, this suffering, this adversity that was everything for me at the time. So I saw that there was no intrinsic difference between the sound in my head and the external sounds. And the sounds out there, I didn't find disturbing in the least. So why was I so hung up about the sound in my head? Then the next step, and this was the fun one, was I then proceeded to learn how to perceive the sound in my head as an external sound, and to no longer, and therefore no longer identify with it as a part of me. And I did this in a very literal sense, which is why it was such great fun, because I spent good chunks of time training to perceive this sound as though it were crickets. If I was inside the house, crickets outside my window. If I was walking, crickets in the brush along the trail. And over time, that particular perception of this sound of tinnitus as actually the sound of crickets became, excuse the pun, second nature. At the same time, I was learning to perceive the sound in my head as an external sound, I was also, by doing this, changing my negative perception of the sound to one that was actually positive, almost pleasant. Again, initially the sound of my tinnitus was a hellish sound, kind of like the screaming of banshees. A constant reminder that something inside of me was broken, kind of like the static of a busted radio. But by learning, training, you know, over and over and over again, the mind to perceive this sound as crickets, this perception gradually altered and became one that was positive and pleasant, and therefore less threatening, and therefore triggering less aversion in the form of fear and anxiety and all the rest. So this sort of playing with perception, altering our perceptions of the world, is of course a huge part of the Buddhist path. For example, the Buddha encouraged us to perceive the body as unattractive, our own and that of others, to perceive the pleasures of the senses as inherently dangerous, and to perceive the self as an illusion. These are all called by the Buddha to change our perception of these particular objects in the world. So, by rather successfully, thankfully, learning to alter this one perception of the sound in my head over time, it really gave me confidence that, who knows, maybe sometime in the distant future, I may actually be able to alter these other much more challenging, much more deeply entrenched perceptions, like my perception of the self. I may be able to alter that too and see it as mere illusion. So it gave me some confidence in my potential future along the Buddhist path. And then, because this sound in my head had become less threatening, had become a more positive object, a less triggering object, it became much easier for me to find that same peace and sense of refuge in my formal meditation on the cushion, because it became much easier to simply note the sound as sound, let it go, and return to the breath, because it wasn't triggering these, you know, much more intense feelings inside me. It no longer encroached on the mind, and so remarkably, even with this raging tinnitus in my head, the silent mind of samadhi, which is a Pali term for a unified, concentrated, undisturbed, calm mind. That silent mind of samadhi became possible again. Ajahn Jeff reminded me that a classical antidote for fear and aversion and other disturbing thoughts is to replace those negative thoughts with wholesome substitutes. And so, for instance, if we are ill or injured, when we reflect on all that the body is still capable of doing, we are replacing those negative thoughts towards the illness or the injury with the wholesome substitute of gratitude for what we still have. When we are suffering in some way and we reflect on the suffering of others and our wish that they be free from their suffering, we are replacing those negative thoughts of our own suffering with the wholesome substitute of compassion for others. So I worked a bit with those. Basically, with regard to the first, Ajahn Jeff was telling me to put my situation in perspective. I'm sure there was some adversity here. There was an unwelcome change in my body. Rather than seeing the glass as half empty, let's see it as half full and think about all that the body and even your ears can still do. I still was healthy, vigorous, really just had a few minor aches and pains to complain about. My ears could still, hear bird song and the wind blowing through the trees and enjoy human speech and enjoy music. And so, there was still so much that I could do. And when I focus on that and fill the mind with gratitude to displace these negative thoughts that I was having towards this, relatively small change in the status quo. And then with regard to cultivating compassion for the suffering of others, I'd had some experience in doing that when I would suffer some rather bad headaches. And I would kind of taste the suffering that I was experiencing as a result of the headache and realize that there are others, millions, around the world who are suffering in far greater ways. And really try to fill my mind with a deep wish that they be free from that suffering, just as I wish that I could be free from the suffering caused by this headache. And when that's really going well, the mind can become so filled with this wholesome wish, this vivid thought of compassion for others, that there really is no room in the mind for fear or aversion. Another piece of advice Ajahn Jeff gave me, and this again is all on the handout, was to contemplate impermanence, the impermanence of the sound in my head. Didn't know what to make of this at first. What's impermanent about this? It's always there. That's the point. That's why I'm suffering. It won't stop. So what does he mean by contemplate the impermanence of this thing? And finally it dawned on me. And this, I think if I had to choose one of these tips, it's a lousy word, isn't it? Sounds so light. One piece of advice that I was given, this is the one that really did it for me, really turned things around permanently, not just the acute distress, but just any distress with regard to this thing. The physiological basis of what I was experiencing, the damaged hair cells in my cochlea, the inner ear, those were always on. And so those signals were always being sent to the brain. But what dawned on me was I was not always conscious of the resulting sound. Because the mind, and this is, we've all experienced this, the mind becomes occupied with other things. So because I'd gotten so obsessed with this sound in my head, it seemed a constant presence in my life, in my world, in my reality. But now I could see that my awareness of this sound was not constant. And, you know, again, we do this routinely. You know, we routinely tune out extraneous sounds like the hum of the refrigerator in the next room or the traffic in the street outside the hall because we're thinking about or doing something else. Our consciousness is fluid, in a sense. Sounds, sights, thoughts keep slipping in and out of the mind. So it seemed like Ajahn Jeff's impermanence was, what he was talking about was impermanence of what in Buddhism we call the aggregate of consciousness. The impermanence in the sense that awareness is a discrete event with a beginning and an end is not a persistent quality of the mind. So I trained to become cognizant of the times when these thoughts of tinnitus were absent from my mind. And I let that recognition, in the last 15 minutes, I haven't given it a thought. I let that recognition bring joy to my mind, gladden the mind. And this should sound familiar. It's very similar to gladdening the mind by noting the absence of the hindrances when we're trying to settle into our meditation. Same thing. So, by reflecting on the inconstancy of my awareness of this sound, the sound became less and less threatening to me. If I became conscious of it again, I knew this will pass. I'm going to become absorbed in something else, and it'll be as if it doesn't even exist during that time. And I knew that for a fact because I would take the time to really reflect on, during the last 15 minutes, I haven't thought about it once. During this whole morning, I really haven't been conscious of this sound. And really just allow that to sink in really deeply. That's the key. So I had seen through a very subtle trick that the mind can play on us. The fact that while we think about something, it can assume an importance all out of proportion to reality. While we think about it, it can seem to color our whole world as if it is a constant presence in the mind. While we think about it, that's the key. Psychologists call this the focusing illusion. A much more clunky way of saying it is what you see is all there is. Or what's the other expression? Nothing in life is as important as you think it is when you are thinking about it. That's the way the Nobel Prize winning psychologist Daniel Kahneman talks about it. I like the focusing illusion. It's a good way of putting it succinctly. Anyway, it's an illusion because unpleasant thoughts can cause us suffering only when we think them. More often than we realize, the mind is occupied with other things. That is, when we're not thinking about a situation, no matter how unpleasant, no matter how dire, when we are not thinking about it, that situation cannot touch us. So try this the next time you're feeling anxious about the fact that you can't stop thinking about some unpleasant circumstance. Investigate the amount of time you actually do spend thinking about it. Reflect on the fact that at all other times, the mind is absolutely free of the influence of that situation. And see if this recognition can bring some ease and some gladness to the mind. It's very powerful. That's my favorite piece of advice. So, I mentioned early on there was one brief exception with regard to the acute distress. Ever since those first 2 weeks after that, after those two conversations with Ajahn Jeff and Ajahn Santi, I had never, with one brief exception, experienced really acute distress as a result of the tinnitus. Here's the exception. I was on retreat in a rather remote place, and I woke up, and it was as if the volume on this busted radio, the static on this busted radio, had just been turned way up. And the first thing I thought was, no, this cannot be the new normal. No, this cannot be the new normal. I immediately felt that old familiar panic just wash over me, this feeling of being trapped in my head. And thankfully, I had brought, well, not these particular notes, but the notes I had actually taken when I spoke with Ajahn Santi and Ajahn Jeff. I brought them with me just in case. And so I took them out, and I just read through them. Just the simple act of reading through these notes and being reminded of the comfort that they brought me took my mind off the fear and the panic long enough for all the sensations that had been triggered by this panic in my body to subside. And this act of distracting the mind or giving attention to something else, this is another classical antidote for disturbing thoughts. It's also very good sense when we're faced with something that's a bit overwhelming, because we don't always have to be good Buddhists. I'm doing this a lot, this talk. I'm going to stop that. We don't always have to be good Buddhists and need to feel like we have to cope with any situation with mindfulness and investigation. And now, there are times when that's just way beyond our capacity. And so at such times, it's one very good thing to do is just give attention to something else. If you read the commentaries, for instance, this particular sutta is called the Sutta on Distracting Thoughts. And there are five ways that we can... kind of confusing the word distracting here. By distracting thoughts, I mean something that's distracting you from concentration, something that's distracting your meditation. But actually, one of the five ways of dealing with those distracting thoughts is to distract the mind, to give attention to something else rather than the thought that's distracting you. And again, this is kind of a way of dealing with thoughts that are distracting to the point where it's just, you know, your current meditation is a wash. And so you just say, okay, I'm going to get up, I'm going to do something else. So that particular thought, you know, the feelings in my body that it's triggering, whatever, give that some time to subside and settle. And in the commentaries, this is all sort of directed towards monks. They talk about, you know, you can knit your robe, you can sew your robe if there's tear in it. You can read the suttas. You can recite one of the suttas or chants that you've memorized. Anything. Just get the mind off it. And in this case, it was reading through this advice that Ajahn Santi and Ajahn Jeff had given me, gave these very powerful sensations that have been triggered in the body time to subside. And then I had some mindfulness again, some clarity. And with that mindfulness and clarity, it occurred to me the sound of my tinnitus was still raging just as loudly, again, turned way up. But it was no longer triggering fear or anxiety in me. So what's going on there? It was very exciting to see that. And, you know, very exciting, because I saw that there was nothing to fear from the sound itself. just sound. And how many times have we been told that? You know, it's just sound. It's just the sight of another person. It's all these things that trigger us. We blame them for how we're feeling, for the disturbing results. And I was doing that. I was adding layer upon layer of suffering onto this simple experience of sound. When actually, if I were to blame anything, I should blame the fear and aversion I had to the thoughts of what I was hearing, or aversion to the sensations I was feeling in my body, or aversion to the aversion. It's just layer upon layer. But all the time I was blaming the sound. That was the bad guy in this scenario. So here, I had just, I think it was very momentary, but there was a time when it was just so clear to me. This sound is raging in my head, and yet I'm just fine now. So clearly, it wasn't the sound that was doing it in the first place. So it made me think at the time of that famous line of Franklin Delano Roosevelt's, his first inaugural address, when he said, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror. That's what we should fear." So after that, with my mindfulness nicely established, remember I was on retreat, so it was easier than sometimes it is. Whenever I felt a hint of panic rising, I just simply, instead of blaming it on the sound, I went and just paid attention to the sensations in my body that were arising. Recognized that those sensations were perfectly harmless, not going to kill me. Not really particularly unpleasant either when you really pay attention to them. And I just watched them subside. And in doing that, I was able to lie back, and I was still feeling a little bit of a buzz because of the excitement of this particular discovery that I had had. And I kid you not, I was able to fall asleep listening to this sound of the raging volume way up, tinnitus in my head, as if it were a lullaby. I was giddy. To the end of the story is that I woke up the next morning, the volume had been turned down. It's been turned down ever since. But I would have been okay, even if it stayed loud. The last thing that I have to talk about is, how am I doing with time?
8:40.
Great. Is Ajahn Jeff told me, and again, Ajahn Jeff is Ajahn Thani Saro, for people who may not know. He told me to consider this sound, this hissing and buzzing, the sound of tinnitus, consider it a warning signal, urging me to reflect on the fact that aging always comes before we want it to. Mm-hmm. Urging me to consider what I really want out of life. In other words, consider it a call to spiritual urgency, what in Pali is called samvega. Spiritual urgency. As I mentioned earlier, the degree of suffering this relatively mild physical complaint was able to trigger in my poorly disciplined mind was very, very, made it very clear to me that unless I, really kick my practice into high gear, there are going to be some very bad times ahead as the aging process progresses. But instead of causing me a sense of dread and foreboding, I really felt excited that I had found this newfound motivation to practice. I was almost grateful for the tinnitus starting to, the title of my talk starting to make more sense. I started to regard this ringing and hissing in my head as sort of a constant, well-meaning companion, kind of standing right there, tirelessly whispering encouragement, reminding me, now is the time to practice. There's no time to waste. So thanks to this latest reminder of my own body's frailty, what we call the five daily recollections became very real, undeniable. Over and over, this kindly sound would gently remind me, aging, sickness, death, loss will surely come. The only thing we can rely on are the results of our actions. Again and again, this tinnitus would lean in close and whisper, so now is the time to practice. There is no time to waste. So I hope that this has given you just a small example of how to practice when faced with some adversity. Adversity can knock us out of our complacency, can provide us with strong motivation to practice, and it can give us a rare chance to become intimate with suffering and the sources of suffering in the mind. It can really be a good friend, or as the Dalai Lama always says, you know, your best teacher. If we can learn to see adversity as an opportunity, we may find that not only can it help us to turn the corner in our ability to cope with whatever it is that we're faced with, but it may take us a few steps further along the path as well. Thanks for listening.